This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support comes from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Your number is 877-217-5757. Reach us by email at talk@talklouisiana.org. We're pleased to have with us the Chief of Police for East Baton Rouge Parish, Murphy Paul. He's been on the job almost 3 years, took the job in 2017, served 19 years with the Louisiana State Police as Lieutenant Colonel when he left and Deputy Superintendent for the Bureau of Investigation. And he holds a degree in criminal justice from Loyola University in New Orleans, his hometown. And good morning to you, Chief Paul.
Good Hello, morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. How do you size up the first 3 years?
Challenging, but rewarding. I tell you, it's been, 2.5 years that we've been here. I think, I'm very self-critical, but I think what's going on right now in the country and what I see happening or the lack thereof of what's happening as it relates to some of the violent protests and looting and other things that are happening around the country is not happening here. So I think that from my position, when I see that, I think that that is important because some of the work that we've put in over the past 2.5 years. So in the relationships that we have built with this community and nurtured, and I'm excited about the future.
We're visiting with Chief Paul again, the number 877-217-5757. Sunday's Advocate in its top story, Above the Fold, Police Debate Likely to Play into EBR Race. It became clear last week during her appearance on Talk Louisiana that Mayor President Sharon Weston Broome won't likely receive support of the Baton Rouge Police Union during her campaign as political pressure mounts nationally and locally for police reform in the wake of the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis. The mayor called out the Baton Rouge Union of Police, saying it has been an obstructive force in her efforts to weed out bad cops in Baton Rouge. Do you share that point of view?
Well, I think there's some cultural issues that we have to acknowledge. I've had those conversations with the leadership of the union about moving forward. In my position, I see value in everybody, and I hope that there's a shared understanding of what's going on in the country right now and the public's expectation on how policing should look. And we started that in 2017 under our mayor's leadership. And it's interesting now we're starting to see nationally changes being made in police departments that already began here in 2017 when the mayor took over. When you look at the reform that's being talked about, you're going to see legislation coming out on the state and a national level. The Baton Rouge Police Department began that. If you look at all the things that they're talking about, we've been moving forward in that direction. And I hope that the union recognizes that and understanding that now more than ever, we have to sit down at the table together in partnership and have those conversations about moving forward and continuing to move forward like we've already began.
Chief, when you took the job, you were a year removed or so from the shooting of Alton Sterling, and that was a controversial case. The person who did the shooting, Blaine Salamone, never served time. He is off the force. You've said he should never have been on. But has this divided the police force in some way?
Yeah, I think there were some cultural issues within the department, those that spoke out about it. I am aware that there's some in leadership positions in other places who've commented on it after I made that decision. It was the right decision. I think some of that was based on relationships. Some of that was based on a lot of people who have comments who don't know the facts, who really didn't listen to why I made that decision, but yet picked points of my speech that didn't suit what they believed. But I think if you go back and you listen to why that decision was made and look at it from a holistic standpoint on every part of that speech that I made. It was directed at different points, different parts of the community. Part of it was towards my officers. So I think there was a some officers and some in law enforcement who didn't. But this is the thing that I share about that. You know, I have yet to speak to a leader in this community who didn't tell me that they would have done the same thing. Now, some may not necessarily say that publicly, and I get that. I respect that and understand that because it was my decision to make. But it was the right decision. And any other law enforcement agency could have hired him before I got here or after. So the question is why nobody else hired him.
877-217-5757 for Chief Murphy Paul. And the last 3 weeks have been difficult for our country, battling a pandemic and also now facing unrest in our cities, and unrest for good reason. Now, violence and looting and that sort of thing is never acceptable, but on the other hand, stepping on a man's throat for 9 minutes and killing him is not acceptable either. What was your take on the death of George Floyd?
It was shocking. It was shocking to the conscience. You know, when I saw it, I saw a police officer who appears to be morally bankrupt. It was inhumane. And I think when we look at what's going on, not only in America, but internationally, I mean, we have protests going on all around the world. To see that, I would like to believe that the men and women of the Baton Rouge Police Department wouldn't do that. I think that when I look at from a historical standpoint in my 28 years of law enforcement experience and even being here, that if we go back and look at that officer's behavior, conduct, there were signs, indicators, and warnings that perhaps were not addressed early on. You don't get to that point to do what he do without in your heart or somewhat understand that there will be accountability for that behavior. It's unexplainable, and it's sad. You know, I've yet to meet anybody in law enforcement that said that behavior was okay. There was nothing, absolutely nothing right about not only his, but those other officers who stood around and did nothing.
Well, I concede you know more than I, but in the Salamone case, clearly we have an officer who is full of adrenaline and may have acted in a way that he would not have if he were not all pumped up. But in this case, the guy's got his hands in his pockets, and he brutally kills the man who's begging for his life, and others around, passerby, saying, stop, stop, stop. And the guy's got his hands in his pocket and appears to just be conducting a cool, calculated murder in public view.
Yeah, it's horrible, and it's horrible. And you know, the chief did the right thing by holding him accountable for that. And it's unfortunate what's going on there. And now what's happening is, you know, when incidents like that happen, it makes its way to every police department in America. So now we're dealing with it. There's this, you know, being painted with this broad brush. You and I know, and we know, that there are men and women out there in the police department all across America who know that that behavior was wrong and would not be tolerated. But it is the reality of what we're dealing with, because when we see that in communities all across America, what it does is it agitates scars that have already been there, scars that were healing here in Baton Rouge. That's why we see some of the peaceful protests that we have here. But I want to say again, we are fortunate in the city of Baton Rouge that we are not experiencing with so many. I think it was at 40 plus. I was at a count that was experiencing some type of violent protest. Ours have been very peaceful. They've been nonviolent. They've been expressing their hurt, their pain, and their frustration. And I believe that it's because the collective healing in this community began after that 2016 incident. And it really began when our mayor president took office and we began to break down those barriers here. That's why we're not seeing it.
Jim and Walker, you're on with Chief Paul.
Hi, Chief Paul. Good morning, Jim. A number of things. The first one is that the officer involved in Mr. Floyd's murder, while
and whose murder? Fired, I'm sorry, which one
Mr. Floyd, George
Mr. Floyd.
Okay,
George Floyd. Okay. While he was fired by the police chief, he was and still is supported by the police union. Our problem with Mr. Salamone here is the fact that while he was fired, he can still move around from police department to police department like pedophile priests did.
All right, we'll get the chief's response. Thank you, Jim and Walker. 877-217-5757 is your number, and we'll return with Chief Murphy Paul after this 90-second pause on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Chief Murphy Paul with us. If you get a busy signal, be patient, but our number, 877-217-5757. Jim and Walker was our first caller and talked about how Blaine Salamone, who was never charged with a crime, he is never convicted of a crime, never tried for a crime. He is free to work elsewhere, but I think you made the point, Chief Paul, that his reputation is such that he would be radioactive, I think, for any police force in America. I doubt very seriously that he will work for one, but he could work in private security. What about that? Is that something that gives you pause?
Well, look, I know there were two independent investigations that went on the federal level, on the state level, that there's a clear difference between a criminal investigation and an administrative investigation. My decision was based on the administrative findings, which the standard is different. But look, I know it was the right decision for the values of this department and for the training that we put up. So, in terms of will that give me pause if he was? I don't know. I don't think he should be in law enforcement. Obviously, I would not have terminated him. He don't have the temperament to be a law enforcement officer. And I believe other police departments share that. I mean, look, that incident happened in 2016. I wasn't hired until 2018. That was kicked down. And I understand it's hard to make those. It's tough to make hard decisions. But I knew it was the right thing to do, and I think that every agency in the surrounding area understood that, and that's why no one offered employment, because there was a reputation that we don't like to talk about. But look, I want to talk about moving forward and not what happened in 2016, because I think that cloud, because of what we're going through, has been resurfaces, right? We talk about the hurt and pain that people have, and it takes them back to 2016. It also takes our officers back to 2016 when our heroes were killed. So all of that creates trauma in the community, not only trauma in our police officers who are dealing with the COVID-19, and now we're managing the environment right now with the peaceful protests and nonviolent that are going on here. But also, we just lost one of our heroes. You know, Lieutenant Hutto was just killed. And one of our officers is still recovering from his injuries. So, you know, we have to manage that trauma and continue to police. And we still have to police. So I want to focus on the present and the future if we can, and not what happened 4 years ago in the city.
Clyde in Lafayette. Clyde, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Chief Murphy Paul.
Good morning, gentlemen. I really do appreciate this conversation. You know, we keep hearing about how there are that not all cops are bad. You know, and this the incident like with Mr. Floyd, that's just one bad apple out of, you know, many good apples. My question is that why isn't the officers on patrol, why don't they, you know, turn in these guys? They know who the bad apples are. So why are we allowing all these good apples to just ignore the bad apples? And is no one listening to officers on patrol?
All right. Thank you, Clyde. Chief?
So what I will tell you, and I can only speak of the changes that we've made, you know, when I look at our internal affairs complaints here, we have about a 36.7 decrease in cases of police misconduct over the past 2 years. In the past 2.5 years, I think I've had about 120 disciplinary rulings since I've been here. And the majority of those are internal. They're not from the public. Now, what we've done here is we've made it easy to file complaints. You can go online. You can go to Baton Rouge. You can Google us at Baton Rouge Police Department. You can go to our website, and you can actually file a complaint online. Every single one goes to our internal affairs section. But the majority of our complaints right now actually come from internal. It either comes from a supervisor who've seen what is a behavior that is not consistent with policy, or one officer sees something and files a complaint on the other one. And also just through the review of our body cameras. You know, we have an audit that goes on where police officers have to review body camera footage at least 3 a quarter. When we get complaints in, we go back, if it goes to internal affairs, they go back six months and do an audit. To make sure that there's no patterns of behavior that need to be addressed, and to make sure that our officers are responding to training. So police officers are coming forward and letting us know. I think that if you really sit down and have a conversation to date with most police officers, you'll see that police officers, when there's a bad apple, we want them out more than others do, because they give us a bad name, and we understand how they tarnish our reputation. So we are receiving those complaints from other officers.
Mike in Villa Del Rey. Mike, you're on Talk Louisiana with Chief Murphy Paul.
Yes, I have two topics with Chief Paul. Thank you, Chief Paul. Very interesting conversation. Everything I've read, and I know you don't want to go back to 2016, but I read that, you know, police got called middle of the night, corner of Fairfields and North Foster, and that was the only car that showed up. I've seen more cars show up in my neighborhood on a domestic call. Now, my second is, what would your feelings be on civil police review boards? I'll listen. Thank
you. All right. Thank you, Mike. Chief?
Okay, I didn't really get the first question.
Well, I didn't either, but what about review boards?
Yeah, and I think on the first question, on calls for service, it's proximity to the call for service. Sometimes you just have police officers that are near. You have officers that may be tied up on other calls for services. So all of those factors play into the number of officers that may respond to a call for service. That's the first one. Second one, on the civil review board. You know, my position is, look, where we're at as a police department, we've been transparent. There's some other things that we're going to be pushing out to show that we can be more transparent on what we're doing. But if we're doing the right thing, then I don't care who's watching. You know, when we look at the body camera program that we have in place, everything is there, to see. So I don't necessarily have a problem with a civil review board. One of the things we did when I came in office last year, we started what's called a chief advisory council. Now, that chief advisory council is made up of members of the community. We have LSU, Southern University, Baton Rouge Community College, high education institution has someone from the SGA appointed. We have community organizations, faith-based organizations, business organizations, and we meet. And in these meetings, I share with them what's going on within the police department. We have conversations. I listen to their concerns about what's going on in the community. And what happens in those meetings, they express concerns where we've had questions about some of our policies. And I've sent that to our senior command staff, and we've changed policies that don't compromise officer safety, that meets the public expectations. So we are actively listening to that board.
All right. Miriam in St. George. Miriam, you're on with Chief Paul. Good morning to you, Miriam.
Hello, Chief Paul. I wanted to compliment the East Baton Rouge police system, because I don't have a problem with them personally. I see they're progressing. I do know... my friend's nephew was doing some of the de-escalation talks
All right. What is your question, Miriam?
I just wanted a compliment.
All right. Well, I'm sure the chief appreciates your compliment. Chief, you like all those you can get, I'm sure. Front page Saturday, New York Times. New York on Friday became the first state to meaningfully take action to rein in police forces after the killing of George Floyd, banning the use of chokeholds by law enforcement. Is that something that you advocate in East Baton Rouge Parish?
Well, I can tell you that's something our mayor president advocated before I got here. Those changes were made before I got here. We banned chokeholds and strangleholds. We banned shooting at moving vehicles. We have mandatory intervention to stop fellow officers from using excessive force. That's required. It's not just in our training. It's also in our policy, and that's one of the things we have to look at. So there's the training, and then there's actually inclusion in the policy.
All right. We're going to return with Chief Murphy Paul after this pause for the news. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number, and talk at talklouisiana.org is our email. And a listener asked, this is Tom on Bluebonnet, about officer pay, which has been an issue, and does this impede the ability to hire as good a people as you need?
Sure, we got to get our pay up. We're around 29-30% less than our peer agencies. And look, we started with that. You know, we put a pay study out there that actually documents that. That's the first step. We did an efficiency study. We believe the efficiency study, if we can get more support on that, will help us. It requires some restructuring within our department, but we believe it's going to recognize about 16-20% of that pay range. That's going to come in around $4 million. And we think we can be more responsible with our current use of how we spend dollars, and that those dollars can be applied towards a raise. So I think with that $4 million and the research that we did, I actually did some polling. We did some polling that basically is very favorable, that the people of Baton Rouge would have supported some type of revenue that will come in. Unfortunately, we had COVID-19. Even though the polling was favorable, that was pre-COVID-19. I just don't think right now the time is right, the atmosphere is right to go before the people and ask for an increase of taxes to help pay for a raise. I think we have to be sensitive and respectful of what's going on in our city right now. And I'm going to be taking a lead and moving forward with asking again next year to take that same plan that I have in place and go at it again, because I believe the men and women deserve it. The timing is just not right because of COVID-19 and the $23 million shortfall we have in our current budget.
Bill Huey writes, there's a shooting every day or two, and a murder nearly every week, actually, well, more than that. But please ask Chief Paul when he expects to get as many guns as we have off the street. Is that an issue, the fact that a lot of people up to no good are locked and loaded?
Well, yeah. I mean, look, the culture of violence here has been going on for quite some time. You know, crime is a socioeconomic issue. And it's bigger than law enforcement. But we have saw some wins over the first 2 years, over 20% decrease in homicides. But I tell you, we were on pace for that, but COVID changed that. You know, we see a rise in domestic violence incident, in particular domestic intimate partner homicides. You know, last year, the entire year, we had one domestic intimate partner homicide. And I believe right now we had over five. Already for this year, we see rises in domestic violence. We have some unsolved that we may think may be domestic related. The COVID has really, and I think the stress and anxiety that goes along with us has caused some increases in our homicides. We're probably sitting at about a 45% increase this year already.
All right.
Compared to the last 2 years. So, but we believe by the end of the year, we're going to continue to get a handle on that. And hopefully we can continue to see that. Now, crime is down in every category overall when it comes to UCR. So we're hoping that we'll continue with some of our initiatives, like our Operation Safe Summer, where we're seeing some decreases because of our patrol strategies.
Mary Patricia in Spanishtown says many media outlets have covered the stark comparison of training received by police officers in the United States compared with other countries, to other countries with minority populations that have far less police violence. What do you make of the fact that there is inadequate training? Is that a valid criticism?
Well, I wouldn't characterize it as inadequate. I'm not sure what reports she's speaking of, so obviously I cannot comment on it. However, I do know that the more we train our police officers and the more that our training evolves with the times, I think we're better off as an agency. You know, one of the things that we see that's very important, and I think is being highlighted on what you've seen in Atlanta, and I'm sure you get different opinions on that on both sides, and what we see going on in America. I think one of the things that has to be embedded in the fabric of all of our training is the sanctity of human life and how valuable and important human life is. That's why the de-escalation training is so important. You know, we instituted procedural justice training here last year, where we actually began training our officers on procedural justice. We got about 15 officers who are now trained to trainers. They can go out there and do the training. And we talk about those issues. You know, we talk about the cultural issues. We talk about the importance of understanding the different cultures. You know, we are a very diverse community, and it's important that we understand the culture differences in our community and make those adjustments. You know, we talking about training. You know, we ask questions.
Right. Okay.
Have you ever smoked marijuana? But there's other things we can ask as well.
Okay. Tracy at the Capitol says that some police officers, not all, but some are not in good physical condition, and it's even worse with the sheriff's department, with these officers with roles hanging off their waistlines. What do you do about physical training? Is there any threshold that has to be reached for these people to stay on the force?
So right now, I think our wellness program that we're growing out, it's going to help with that. Right now, obviously, to get hired as a police officer, you have to go through a physical assessment, and that's on our website. If you go to www.geauxbrpd.com, or you can go to our main website, our Baton Rouge Police website, and there's also a link there, and you can see what that training is. But no, it is not an annual thing. We've talked about that. Talked about partnership to get our wellness program that doesn't just cover the mental health of our officers, but the physical health as well. I would bet you that most of those officers, when they were hired, were not that large, and I think it goes into the stress and anxiety that goes on in the police work. You know, there's a lot of trauma in being a police officer and what we see and experience, particularly working in a major city like Baton Rouge.
You look like you work out.
Well, you know, I just started. I've gained a lot of weight since I've been in this position. And after you go through about three or four suits, you know, it gets expensive. So I started running again. And I tell you, it helped me with COVID, all the stress and anxiety. It's not one of, you know, the same stress you're experiencing as a community, our office experienced the same thing. You know, with our families. And I can tell you that when I started working out again and I started running again, at the encouragement of some of my staff, because they saw the weight coming on, I've been more focused. I've come to work with less stress. You know, we have a tendency to take that out on people in our inner circle more, our family and our loved ones and those who work directly around us. And I had to check myself. I had to look in the mirror and say, Chief, you can do better. You have to empty your cup of stress just like everybody else. So I, too, had to go out there and get help through the wellness program and through my mentors to tell them what I was feeling emotionally when Lieutenant Hutto was killed, what I was feeling emotionally going through this COVID crisis. And I shared that with the men and women and tell them, look, I'm getting the help I need, and I encourage you because I want our office to be mentally, emotionally, and physically prepared.
Dan downtown. Hi, Dan.
Yeah, Chief, would you be willing to support moving funds for the police department high-tech weaponry to health and education of the poor citizens?
What about moving?
I'm sorry, what's the question?
He asked taking funds for weapons and moving them to health and education of citizens.
I'm not sure what he means by that.
I think he thinks we have a greater need for the health and education, but obviously police officers have to have weapons to defend themselves and the community. We've got several people who are trying to get in under the wire here, and I'd like to accommodate as many of you as possible. Another person, it's a good question. Have there been some cases of coronavirus within the department?
You know, we've been blessed. We only had one officer that was tested early on, but it was a non-department exposure, meaning he was exposed off the job. And that's the only one. You know, we were very proactive from day one through using our real-time crime center and our telephone reporting unit, where you can actually use videos similar to FaceTime to talk to police officers in live, where you didn't have to have a police officer there. More than 3,000 calls went through our telephone reporting unit that helped us out. We changed our policy immediately on arrests. We were not making arrests for misdemeanors other than domestic-related incidents or DWIs. Everyone else, you were issued a summons. So we tried to do our part with the social distancing overall. Before the stay-at-home order went out, we began sitting down and having those policies, and we believe that it paid off. I think we are a model agency when it came to addressing the COVID-19. A lot of things you were seeing in other places, we were not having here.
All right, and a final question for the chief, and a good one from Holly in the Garden District about the fact that you're an outsider. You came from state police. Is that a factor in some of the tension that is obviously apparent in the department? And also the fact that you're a black man in a city that's got a lot of white cops. Do they resent this? This is Holly in the Garden District. What do you think?
No, I think anything. Anytime you're trying to change a culture, when there's culture changes, I don't care if it's just police department, I don't care if it's a business, changing cultures are hard. So when you come in as an outsider, yes, I did kind of give a different perspective because I came in and the culture is a little different. So I think that that played more of a role into it in some of the changes that were made. But look, changing a culture is hard to do. But what we're doing is we're focusing on the behavior. I believe culture is aligned into attitudes. And when we begin to change behavior, then attitudes will soon follow. And when we begin to change attitudes, then we're changing culture.
All right. Well, Chief, we got a roll. Thank you for your time. Let's do it again soon. We'd like that. Thank you so much.
All right. God bless you. Anytime.